Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for at least the next hour on this November the 4th on the West Coast, now November the 5th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zones, as well as everywhere else around the world across the Atlantic Ocean. We've got a fabulous show planned for you tonight. Now, how do I know it's going to be fabulous? Well, we're going to be playing some music, and we have a very talented recording artist on from the United Kingdom. And before we introduce her, I'm going to just give you a little recap on what's going on with all the fear-mongering around the world. I had the opportunity for a few moments to spend some time on Drew Rain's A Marine's Disquisition, heard on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on blogtalkradio.com. I should welcome you folks also, because you're probably streaming this program or broadcasting somewhere around the world, from Russia all the way down to New Zealand, all over Central and South America. We're heard all over the United States and in Canada. I'm hearing that people are picking up the show in Mexico, as far away as Hawaii. And believe it or not, as you've maybe heard on some previous shows, we're heard all around this galaxy, thanks to the United Galactic Federation. So we want to give our warm greetings to those folks. What's going on here on planet Earth? Well, there's a new flu pandemic scare, and I have to call it a scare, going on in the Ukraine. We had one in Thailand recently, and maybe some of you folks aren't aware of this, but there was one in Venezuela, particularly the indigenous people in the Amazon jungle are supposedly coming down with the swine flu. Now, I don't know if they got that when they were on an airplane or swinging in the trees or or what. But I stumbled across something, sort of intuition speaking here, and I've shared this with Dr. A. Truat, Drew Rains, Andrew S. Jones, who is a National Institute of Health whistleblower in this flu pandemic thing, and these emails that are going around, or a few articles that are describing thousands or even hundreds of thousands of people getting sick from the swine flu, is ridiculous. It's bogus. It's deceitful. It's nothing but a pack of lies. I found that there's a major banking scandal at the National Bank of the Ukraine, and a former Russian bank director absconded with over $1 billion. I'm sure that's just a drop in the bucket compared to what's probably been stolen. The Thailand case, which was reported some time back when we had Drew Rains and Truat on the show, we talked about the USS New Orleans that had set port in Phuket, Thailand, and they had some Thai children go on the ship and take a tour, and they were given some treats, some food prepared in the kitchen there, and they all came down with the swine flu. Venezuela, the Stanford bank scandal. You remember that came out just after the Madoff scandal. There was at least $3 billion plus involved in that. It seems like everywhere where we have bank corruption, we have the swine flu breaking out. and I would, you do the homework, folks. Check the banks in your area and see if you're not, experiencing a bank scandal and then reports of the swine flu. It's called misdirection. It's the Hegelian dialectic, and we talk about that quite frequently on that show. But we're not going to spoil tonight's interview and tonight's show with any more of that drivel. In fact, I have two songs that I would like to dedicate to the players that are doing that, and we'll do that as the show goes on. Well, tonight's guest was born in Liverpool, England, and from the beginning, she was recognized as an important talent in jazz. She's worked with many famous names throughout the world, Don Weller, Harry Beckett, Jean Toussaint, Courtney Pine, and many others. Her work culminated in a tour of the UK and Europe, also with the Charlie Watts Big Band, and more recently, she has made some contributions to two Acoustic Alchemy albums. Now, aside from that, I have to say, and we're going to allow her to speak because she can relate this to you much better than I can. She has the voice of an angel. She sings jazz. She sings, really, if you can sing jazz, you can sing any kind of music. She's got more soul than any singer I've heard in a long time. She's got fabulous technique. She's a writer. She even writes poetry. So you can imagine how great her lyrics are. And she's an arranger, producer, and just a fabulous recording artist, and her name is Julie Dennis. Julie, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Hi, nice to be here. Sounds rather glorious.
I heard you chuckle when I described the Banks and the swine flu. Isn't it funny, huh? It sort of follows financial corruption, doesn't it?
It all makes perfect sense.
Well, yeah, a virus needs a good breeding ground.
Lovely.
Well, tell us a little bit more about yourself. Now, I should tell the listeners that I was introduced to you by one of our mutual friends, Peter, or as he's known, Pieter Cassander, or Cayander, I mean. Who has been on my show. He's written some books, and he's really a loving soul. And he thought that you and I should get together and work on some music and a couple of other things that you're doing. So that's how we came to meet, through this show, basically. Mm. And, I was really surprised to hear your music and to hear your voice. But give us some background on your upbringing and your training, if you would.
Well, I mean, I was sort of born in the north end of Birkenhead, which is sort of across the Mersey from Liverpool. But normally if you say to people, I come from Birkenhead, they've never heard of it. But the Liverpool, they know the Beatles. And I must say that every time I say Liverpool, people say, oh, the Beatles, Cilla Black, and as if nothing else has happened from Liverpool at all. But Birkenhead is even less known about, but that's how I started. My father was in a skiffle band at the same time as Jerry and the Pacemakers, and it was very much a sort of the 60s revolution was going on, but in sort of north end of Birkenhead in shipbuilding land, nobody really noticed, other than there's always been this wonderful tradition of natural sort of writing and music that goes on pretty much in every other house. There's a guitar player in every other house anyway in the area I come from. So I was brought up in a very musical household with rehearsals going on all the time at the same time as my dad working down the factory 12-hour nights. So it was all just very, very natural when I was younger. So, and my sisters are also singers, and so we all used to entertain ourselves with a cappella versions of good old Motown tracks, and didn't really think we were training ourselves then, really, but I suppose that was all part of it. And then I sang in church choirs from about 12, had all sorts of problems with Christianity and controversies with the vicar, but he wasn't bothered as long as I turned up, and I got 5 bob for weddings and 7 and 6 for funerals, and it was glorious, and I could never read, so I used to just make it up as I went along, which is pretty much, I think, where I learned to improvise, because I always thought somebody would rumble me unless I sort of sounded like it fitted, and no one ever did, really. And then I sort of worked as a, I sort of started with Unilever research as a scientist when I left school and thought that's where I wanted to go. But I sort of felt my, you know, my brain was coming out through my ears after a while. I was so bored. It was only so much you can get excited about bleach technology and soap powder. So I went on to university. I was the first one to go to university from my home. So it was all very unusual. And it's from there I hated it after about 3 months and thought I'll either go to an audition or I'll go to a three-legged bar crawl. And the audition was where I went, and that's where I started singing and acting, and I met the right people. And from there on, I just didn't look back, really, from there. And so That's the beginning. I don't want to bore you by going on anymore. That's the first section of the show.
No, that's very interesting. I find it interesting that you said that you sort of make it up as you go along. You could have had a career in politics, too.
Actually, I did stand for president at university.
Oh, really? Okay.
Caucus, and honestly, the palaver, you know, in a girl, especially a working class, because it was a very posh university where about 90% of what we call hoorahs, which is terribly posh, upper middle class. And I was probably one of the few working class girls there. And, of course, because I came from a strong tradition of union workers and sort of strikers and the miners, you know what I mean? Like, I was well in there shouting my head off all the time. And even though because there's the Labour Party here, which is probably the same as your Democrats, really, and the Tories, the Republicans, and I was standing for the Left Caucus, and the Labour Party had decided they had positive discrimination for women candidates. So despite themselves, they had to have me as their candidate. It galled them. And it upset the boys so much that they put an independent left Labour candidate up and split the vote, and then they let the Tories get in. So it was quite a palaver. And somebody who said he was an anarchist had, went for me, tried to stab me at the hustings, apparently, and I got carried off very dramatically. So it was all very dramatic and wonderful, but... And I was very involved politically with Greenham Common and trying to get sort of, you know, nuclear arms out of the country. And just very, very proactive against fascism and racism in Britain. And got into quite a lot of trouble at university for not concentrating on my studies instead of politics. And so it was a very controversial time. And I wouldn't go so far as to say I was enjoying it, but it certainly is part of why I am who I am today.
Well, it's very interesting. A lot of what you described, not everything, but especially how you got into music and your developing of your own style and your talent was very much like how mine was as a child. I was pretty much self-taught, of course, until I went to music school. And for me, music school was really a drag. I just wanted to play and write and create.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of stuff that, we can look back and we can see where it's all about mind control. They even have it in music, you know.
I think that was the important thing about going to music school for me, because I went back to music school much later, sort of when I was postgraduate. I went to university. I did a degree in psychology. That was my first degree. And then it was after working with the Charlie Watts band, a guy called Olaf Vatt, who's a fantastic sort of clarinet and sax player, suggested to me that I did what's called the jazz course, or it's like an MA in jazz rock composition and arrangement at the Guildhall School of Music. And it's very much based on the Berklee model.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all funky, you know, and Scott Stroman, who's an American, mid-American sort of instructor there, still runs the place, actually, still runs the course. So it was very American-influenced, really. And when I was there, I went because, when I went to the audition, I sort of got in on my improvisational skills, because everybody else had a music degree that had gone, or had gone to some of the earlier music degree places. And I was really intimidated, because I'd written by ear all my life. I'd put shows on, but I still didn't really feel that I could call myself a grown-up proper musician, because I didn't have the chops that those people had, so I thought. Mm-hmm. And I think what I did learn at music school was bullshit from bullshit, really.
You have to watch your language on this show. I have to apologize.
Sorry, I didn't realize that was language. That doesn't really constitute language. I do apologize, everyone.
It's okay. We do have some children that listen in various parts of the world, so...
Oh, sorry, kids.
They're up. And
that's not even considered swearing in my household. I'm going to have to watch my mouth.
Okay, well...
Okay. My mother would be horrified.
I had a similar upbringing in terms of listening to R&B. You know, we had... CKLW Radio, which was out of Canada, and they were playing, they were right across the bridge, the Friendship Bridge from Detroit, Michigan, where Motown Records was. Mm. And so we grew up listening to Motown and all the bands were, the good musicians were playing Motown stuff. Mm. And, you know, we had horn bands and really good vocals and lots of rhythm. And, I had studied classical music, and I got into jazz at a very early age because there was a point where I felt like classical music just didn't do it for me anymore. You know, it became an issue of how many times can you play this piece perfectly, and with no regard for feeling or, you know, putting self-expression in there. There was a proper way to play it, and had to be played that way, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of what's accepted. And there were other artists, you know, starting out as a trumpet player, there were other artists that that played a spectrum of music. I remember Al Hurt, who had gone to the University of Cincinnati, studied classical music, but here he is playing Dixieland, and he got into jazz a little bit, and he had a few pop records, and then Rafael Mendez, who was famous for playing Flight of the Bumblebee. And I used to play these records note for note. I used to copy. So I developed my ear at an early age and found out I had perfect pitch, thought I had a disease. Because I was told I was going to have problems with that later on, you know. And believe me, in some places I did have problems. The out-of-tune squeaky violins drove me up a wall. But I came to love, you know, string sections in my productions because there are some really good string players. It's just that I hadn't found them yet.
Yeah.
So when I went to Europe... I actually ran into some really good musicians. In fact, I had a band called Cheeky Charlie. Now, you would know what that means, being from England.
Yes.
and these guys were from the Sunderland area.
Oh, really?
They were great, great musicians. And we had I had a bass player, a guitar player, and a drummer. And I was playing keyboards and playing all the horns, and we all sang, and we were really a good band. Mm. We knew the band was headed to split up when the bass player, who had gone home for a funeral in his family, flew back to Germany to rejoin our tour. And instead of bringing his gig clothes, he had a suitcase full of Newcastle Brown Ale.
Well, it's Sunderland, you know. You know, it's a bit like the lifeblood. You can't not have you can't have somebody from Sunderland without the Newcastle Brown Ale.
Oh, he said this is such a famous beer over there. He said the hospital has a Newcastle Brown Ale award. You know, so
my best friend and label manager, her family are all from the Northeast, and when we go, but they now live in California. You know, and every time we go, we have to take you know Newcastle Brown with us at least. A few bottles, you know what I mean? And now they can buy it there and they're beside themselves because there's an English shop which brings in Newcastle Brown. It's very important to them.
Yes.
Even now, 20 years into living in California, they have to have their Newcastle Brown Ale.
Yes. Well, I we're teasing our audience now. They're probably wondering, well, let's have some music. Let's hear this lady sing. I've been fortunate to receive a few of your tracks via the courtesy of our advanced technologies. You were able to send them across the ocean and partway across the United States. I picked the songs I thought would be appropriate for the show. I know that some of the stuff you sent me were rough mixes or they haven't been released and mastered yet. So, but I did pick a few songs that I think you'll appreciate the flow of this. You recorded a famous Peggy Lee song that was real popular when I was just a young whippersnapper, we'll say. And it was basically just a bass and Peggy Lee and some finger snapping, you remember that original record.
Oh, yes, I do, yeah. I listened to it. I mean, I love the record, you know what I mean? It was actually suggested that I did this record by a guy called Sharam Tabor, who's part of Deep Dish. He's one of Deep Dish, which are a DJ crew in Washington. And I did a track called Sugar. I wrote that and it got released on Yoshitoshi. And he said, you know, because so many people have said, you know, you sound so Peggy Lee and so does your stuff. Have you ever thought about doing Fever? And I said, I've wanted to do Fever for a long time. And we just never got round to it, so I just did it myself. And then we released it on my own label, and, you know, it really worked. And it took me quite a while because, you know, the 6/8 feel for me, the swing, it's quite difficult when you're doing, I did it in a house environment, house music environment, which is very 4/4 and square. And to just get that swing in between the beats, it took me a long time, but I really enjoyed getting pedantic about it. So I hope people like it.
Anyway. Yes, and I'd like to dedicate this to those that are putting out all this anxiety over the swine flu pandemic.
Exactly, yes.
This is fever.
Are you ready? I'm fire.
Reminds me of the swine flu.
What a wonderful idea.
I'm just kidding.
Romantic. Actually, the greatest rendition I got of that was when I was in New York, and I was going to see Ultra Records about this, and on the way I got a taxi because I didn't know where the hell I was going. So then and they're so friendly, and it was the classic Italian taxi driver, you know, Italian New Yorker, saying to me, how come you're going to the record label? Is it something exciting? And I said I was releasing this, and he just started singing it, you know, the top of his lungs. He goes, I know that song. And he sang it to me all the way to my destination, you know, and it was great. And I think that's what's lovely about that song. It's got like a mantric sort of, you know, quality. Everybody knows that song, and everybody has a history with it. And I think that's why, you know, even if you're not into that, I mean, there's lots of mixes of it that suit some people, some that don't. That's particularly sort of, that's my sort of take on it. But just hearing the song on its own with nothing else going on, everybody gets that swing, that click, you know. So you could afford to even not have it going on and people hear it in their consciousness, their historic consciousness. And I think it has a real quality, that song. Everybody goes, I know that, and can sing at least the first verse and the first chorus.
Yeah.
So.
Now I would take it that this is a popular dance tune in Europe. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, and it's also in America because it was a joint release with Harem Records. I did a remix with, I asked DJ Sultan of Harem Records to do a remix of it for me, for America. And he said, I like it so much, I want to license it, let me do it here in America. And they're in Canada, actually they're based in Canada, but he did all of North America. So it's been particularly happening in America as well, certainly on the dance scene. And in Miami, at the music conference, it was really received well in the Yoshi Toshi tent, as they call it. So it's done just as well there, really. So, yeah, it's different. You know, just people like different mixes here in Europe. And the lovely thing is, because Sultan took it over to America, he did all the mixes that everybody wants to hear there. So it's gone everywhere, really.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to go into another track that that you sent me. We had an election, as you know, last year, and I'm not trying to politicize the show.
I am political. I'm so personal is political, as far as I'm concerned. Don't apologize for politics to me.
But we do discuss it from time to time. And when I heard this, I thought, you know, this country was promised change, and boy, are we getting it. But not the kind of change that most would have hoped for.
Mm.
And so I dedicated this song to an individual. We call him the Usurper, and we call him the Long-Legged Mac Daddy, courtesy of Dr. Pastor James David Manning, who has been very outspoken.
Mm.
But this is the perfect song because it's really laid back. And the words in many places actually apply. So we can talk about this after we listen to this. This is called You've Changed, Julie Dennis.
You've changed. That sparkle in your eyes. Your smile is just a careless yawn. You're breaking my heart. You've changed. You've changed. Your kissing thank you.
Dennis. Boy.
That's a really, the people I love most playing together, and it was in my living room in Oxfordshire, and we thought, for heaven's sake, we've got to put something down, you know, and so Julian Nicholas, who's a saxophone player there, I've known him since university, he's, you know, for like 100,000 years, and he is one of the most amazing players I've ever come across. He played like that when he was 17, and he was really very involved with Bobby Wellens, is almost like his dad. And I absolutely adore the guy. And it's that thing when you can breathe a certain way and you just travel together. And also the piano player is a lady called Frances Knight. Again, who's somebody I absolutely adore, can move with me with breath. They both write amazing stuff independently, but together we just breathe as one. And I absolutely adore them. And they're the reason I decided quite a while back that I only work with people I love. And that way the music speaks for itself. And I think they're just both the most beautiful, inspiring players.
Boy, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could do that in every aspect of our lives, work with people that we love.
Exactly. Well, that's been my sort of bottom line really now. And I do find that it gets rid of a lot of the noise of life when you put that restriction in there. Or at least if you try to be unconditionally loving with everybody, that way it comes back to you anyway.
Well, if I can comment on your technical prowess, I find that you have absolute accuracy in pitch recognition. There were times, especially in your lower range, where you remind me of Sarah Vaughan. You've probably heard that from musicians, you know.
I mean, it's one of the, Sarah Vaughan is somebody that I've listened to and loved a lot.
And your, you know, the facility, the flexibility that you have is really amazing. And I know that you teach vocals as well. So I imagine if you're able to convey, and it's the case with any instrumental or vocal teacher, vocal coach, they like to say in Hollywood, you're going to be producing students that are going to become professionals themselves if they're very serious and they listen to what you do. But boy, I just love the inflection in your voice, and you sound almost like you're talking, if you know what I mean. I mean, it sounds so natural that
it's interesting you say that, because that's really the my first approach with teaching voice is that it's actually about rediscovering and introducing yourself to your organic voice, which is the voice you were born with, you came out as a baby and you sang with, and it's taking it down to that naturalness. And with the ear, it's about total trust. And so instead of thinking, you know, I'll go back and I'll check that that's all right and I'll examine myself, it's to say it doesn't belong to you, the voice. It's simply something that passes through you. If you have total faith and create imagery of where the sound is going, then it will travel and land all on its own. The minute you don't trust, the pitch goes. So one has to be like an open vessel and explore the territory of the internal world and make that decision before you even breathe to say the first note. And since sort of trying to take that into how I work and then it becoming that, it does become as natural as speaking. That's, I think people don't have to learn to sing. People have to unlearn to sing badly, if you like.
Oh, I'm real good at that.
I don't know about that. I think you're being a bit... I think your chops are fairly impressive to me. So I don't think that's true. I mean, you have a very resonant, flexible, open voice as well, and you have some of that stuff going on, most certainly, I'm sure, in your mentality. But once the decision's made, the doing is easy. That's what I mean, and that's what I say to people. It's really not that complex. It's not lots of sort of technical sort of worrying in academics. It's just about allowing the natural flow of the in and out of breath and allowing the breath to carry the sound to where it wants to go, and sending it somewhere and being very positive about how you direct it.
Yeah.
It's just great work, really.
Well, I can tell you from personal experience, and lately I've been doing a ton of radio, three shows a day on many days throughout the week. And some of those are long shows, 2 hours. You can figure in a day, 5 or 6 hours of broadcasting really takes a lot out of you. There aren't many people in radio that are doing that much. And with me, it's about getting the message out. But I can tell anyone, if you have plans to record your voice in a song, try to get some rest, up your voice.
I mean, one has to rest the body because it's the instrument through which, isn't it? But I also try to think, well, I was getting a lot of that exhaustion, you know, with and the voice being exhausted as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of my approaches is to try and think that as I sing, I become clearer. As I sing, I get energy. So rather than thinking I'm giving out energy as I speak and as I sing, that each time I speak and sing, I'm revving up, if you like, more and more energy. And I get more energy the more I speak and the more I sing. And I found that exhaustion happens with my body, but not with my voice.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I think the voice doesn't belong to me, then I don't find I get that exhaustion in the voice. I think it's in the body, but it's quite a hard, it's just a mindset change.
Mm-hmm.
But it's when when one forgets that the voice doesn't belong to you, that's just the mentality that works for me, that it doesn't belong to me. It's a separate entity. It's simply carried by my breath and my thought. That though the body gets exhausted, the voice just regains strength by every phrase and nuance you use.
Yes. Well, it's funny. Once in a while, like in the summertime, I might open a window to my studio, and my neighbor will be out there trimming the hedges or raking leaves, and I'll be recording vocals, and he'll hear the singing, and next time I see him outside, he'll say, I was listening the other day to some music coming out of your place. He said, who was singing? And I said, oh, that was me. And and then he says, who were you singing to? And I said, my microphone. And you know, well, you ought to come over when we have a cookout or something, and you know, bring your instruments over and play. But last time he had an Elvis impersonator, so I excuse myself from that event. But in general, people love to hear music, and I think they're amazed when they hear it being created. You know, there's a lot of work that goes into production, and people. People have an image in their mind when they hear someone that they haven't seen before.
Yes.
I'm sort of segueing into the next song. I think you know where I'm going. You related a story to me off the air in a previous conversation that we had where you were being picked up by some people.
Yes, yes.
I wonder if you would share that with the listeners.
Well, I did.
I
was asked. I did a vocal, an Aretha Franklin vocal, "A Chain of Fools." It's Aretha Franklin's a well-known song, and I sang it. And because often you don't meet people, everything happens live. I mean, a lot of people I've done work with, I've never actually met in the flesh. And so I sang the vocal anyway, and then I went to do the final recording to after having sent a demo. And I had to be picked up at the station by these guys in Sheffield, and this car just kept going past me and back and forwards and past me. And I knew they didn't know who I was because they were expecting a big black woman, basically, from what they'd heard of my voice. And I just stopped the car. I said, "Are you looking for me?" And he said, "No, no." I said, "I'm Julie." And they said, "Oh, yes." And there was I, this skinny white Irish girl, do you know what I mean, looking totally unlike the voice they'd heard. And they couldn't really get their head around it. And I think people also think they don't relate it. I often have to sing along to a record to show people that it's me. And then the connection happens. But I don't think many people see my physicality and my voice being the same thing. And it may well be because it's quite diverse, because I tap into other stuff. I don't know, but that was that story that goes with that. So it was quite funny.
Yeah, well, when the listening audience hears your voice in this song, I think they'll understand why those people didn't think it was you standing there.
To be fair, you know, I used to listen and listen and redo and listen to Aretha Franklin through all of my childhood and try to get that technique. And that's how I learned. That's how I came to the technique I have about teaching, was through mm-hmm. this. So,
and yeah. what's amazing is you have your own style. You're able to do. It's like vocal gymnastics, really. But it doesn't have this regimented or pretensive style. You know, it's very natural, very emotional. You're very good at putting your emotion into your voice and staying within yourself, and at the same time taking the listener someplace else.
Well, I like to think that interpreting the song is my forte, really, because that's what I love to do. It's communicating the idea of the song.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to me.
Well, we'll dedicate this song to those that pulled off the bailout in the United States, okay?
Okay, lovely. That's me. I love it.
This is Julie Dennis and Chain of Fools. It's coming right up here. I forgot to cue it. So it's coming up. Chain of Fools, Julie Dennis.
That session was a real example of that, what I was talking about earlier on, about increasing your energy as you sing, because it was a 12-hour session. I drove up from London to Sheffield, did a 12-hour session. They didn't really feed me. And then I drove back in the snow to London after that and still managed to do all that. And then it was only by the end of the 12 hours that I was really beginning to warm up. So it was a very strange, an extreme example of how that can work.
Yeah. Now, you know, I don't know about the listeners, but I can't sit here without tapping my feet, so I have to mute my microphone. So there's no rumble. I just love the range that you have and the ease that you sing. What's interesting is that, you know, as a producer, my listeners know that I'm involved in music production and performance. And although I haven't done as many musical shows as I would like to with all the stuff that's going on in the world, you know, it seems like you would just be a dream to work with in the studio, that your voice lends itself very well to lots of technical possibilities using, you know, today they're called plugins. In the old days, it was outboard gear and effects.
Yeah,
But I can tell that you have a tremendous amount of control, and basically you just go in and do it probably in one take. Don't make me look bad here now.
it's fairly true, I do things in a single take, and often the single take is always the first take is often the very best one. Do you know what I mean? And even if you play, and I think also often if I overwork and become too headbound about getting something right, that's when it just doesn't breathe. You know, so it's better to go for the first take and then not mess around. I'll often work at home especially when I'm writing a song. I'll work something because I want to change inflection or I want to change the way I'm placing something, but the actual ability to do it first take is something that I take for granted. But I realize people don't. I never really realized people didn't have that as an option very often.
Yeah, well, with the modern accoutrements of sound recording and production, they can actually correct someone's voice when they're singing out of tune and raise the pitch, and lower the pitch, and it does have a little bit of a mechanical feel to it when that occurs.
Yes,
though the average listener can't even tell.
It can take some of the beauty out. It takes the beauty out of us. I think often it's better left, you know, like, and because sometimes even the tuning is better left, because except if it's a nightmare. But because I mean, I'll often have, but like, I'll notice if I've got like one or two notes just not quite hitting cleanly in the center of the sound and pitch wise, and somebody says that, like, no one knows, but it will irritate me every time it goes past me. And so there are certain things that I'll think I'd want to tweak that, but I'm not allowed to usually.
Mm-hmm.
People say, no, I don't want to tweak. Do you know what I mean? We work together. And so I've learned to love my little moments. But I think the breath and the interpretation gets lost if you break it up too much. And, you know, that's often the danger of it.
Yeah. Now, one of the songs you sent me, and I'm going to give the title right now. I'm wondering if there's a story behind this, or this was just a... you know, one of those inspirations that just came out of nowhere. Hostile Territory. Is there a story behind that song?
There's a few stories behind that song, yeah. But there's
give us the clean one if you could. No, I'm just just kidding.
Well, I'm it is just it's about my life, really, my whole life. It's it was also done at the time of when, you know, Iraq, what was going on. At the time there, it was a reflection of what was going on in my life emotionally, but it was also what was going on globally, sort of microcosm and macrocosm and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a single mum, and me and my kids do everything, you know, together, and I felt very much that we were walking in a strange land. I was coming to America a lot to try and talk to people about my voice and about what I was trying to do with a vocal download company I'm building, and talking to business people. It wasn't really my world. And I did feel that I was walking in incredibly hostile territory and that I had to be very careful. But I had no choice but to walk forward because I felt I'd been given something to do. And I feel that about my voice. I think it's a God-given talent. And I think it's something that I've been given to do in order to communicate. And I found, and I think we've spoken about this before, that my voice has a healing quality. People have often said it has a healing quality, and I think that's the vibrational, tonal stuff. And because I think of myself as a channel for healing energy, and that comes across. And but one has to be protected. One has to learn to protect oneself. And it was about learning to protect myself whilst feeling I was going mad sometimes or not coping with hostility and heaviness in the world and feeling the absolute pain of some of the awful things, some of the things you often talk about, the scandals, the ecological disasters. Sometimes it can overwhelm me because I'm sensitive. So it's all about that, being overwhelmed but having to go forward and remembering to, you know, look at what you've got to do and why you've got to do it, and remember you've got people to get out there, communicate this to, and the healing to bring. So it's got quite a big story for me, this song.
Mm-hmm.
So going crazy and still walking forward.
Well, they say that music calms the savage beast. Maybe we should play this for the Illuminati, huh?
Let's do it.
This is Hostile Territory.
Yeah. of war and the moth feet of boundary. While under my feet I feel a point of no return.
Hostile territory. Okay, well, while that was playing, Seth, you got to watch the text messages during the music because we get the boinks, points. But that's radio anyway. We had a comment. Now I just got an oh, sorry. Our music director would like to play the music, your music, on BBS Radio. I told you that. See, we have a situation here. We have the founders of BBS Radio, Don and Doug Newsom, are twin brothers.
Oh, okay.
And Don handles all the real heavy stuff, and Doug gets to pick the music.
Uh-huh.
And occasionally, we get to give some input. You know, they involve me once in a while. They'll ask me, what do you think of this song or this artist? And it's happened a few times. Mm-hmm. And then, so I played your music a few nights ago, last week, actually, for Don, and he really liked it and said, yeah, Doug's probably going to really like this. Uh-huh. Doug also wants to know if you're single. And my response, Doug, is spoken for. It's my show.
Very nice to hear.
But you see, you have that quality to your voice. It's very alluring. You know, you make people forget they're listening to music in a way, if you know what I mean. They're hearing a story or they're feeling what's in your heart, I think. And I think that's what's coming across when somebody comes.
I'm trying to, that's very much where I think when I'm trying to, when I've written a song, it's usually from a piece of poetry and it's usually about what's happened or it's very personal for me. And so I am telling a story on a very personal, and I feel as if I'm talking to people on an individual level. So it's really lovely if that comes across because that's exactly what I'm trying to, what I think I'm doing is talking to people. And it's interesting when you go to a gig sometimes that people will come up and actually kiss me and hug me, or I don't know, and it can be quite intimidating. It used to be actually intimidating.
I'll be right over.
People feel that they know you intimately and that you know them intimately. And when I recognised it was that quality that was doing it, I didn't feel so freaked out at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to hear the feedback, really, because that whole thing about walking alone in hostile territory is, you can be putting it out and you think, is anybody actually hearing this or listening to this or does it really matter? That's what it's about. And are you going crazy with yourself thinking you're just endlessly putting this stuff out and for what? And then you get this lovely feedback like that. And it's very rewarding for me. So I thank you for that.
Yeah. Well, there you go, Doug. You got your answer. They're cracking up right in the studio. What you just said brings to mind some of the female vocalists that we would audition many years ago, you know, 20, 30 years ago, when I was playing in clubs. And I still occasionally play in a club or some private function, more concerts than anything, or, you know, the studio. I mean, that's my real love.
Mm.
And we played a place where, you know, you got five guys in the band, and everybody sings, and they sing really well, really nice harmonies. And you don't have a chick singer. You got to get a chick singer. If you get a chick singer, you know, we'll pay you twice what you're asking.
Yeah.
And we auditioned a truckload of, or a lorry full, as they say in England, of female vocalists, and we settled on one that was sort of like a Tina Turner type. But she got to be a bit too much after a while because all she could think of was going to Las Vegas and becoming a star. And I had played Las Vegas as a teenager and with a very musical band. I played in an old club called the Pussycat A Go-Go.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some really good groups that played there. She would have been happy to be the lounge band in Caesar's Palace or the Sands or someplace like that. So eventually we just got tired of that because we weren't interested in going to Vegas. But and that's really not where you go if you want to make a deep, profound musical statement. The money's good, but it's very grinding, very grueling. And you're playing for a lot of drunks. You know, they have drink minimums there.
So yeah, yeah. Well, I have a confession to make there, Rick, a bit of a confession, because I do have a secret sort of a desire to hit Vegas with something deeper and more profound.
Well,
but,
then it's
off. But in a way, because I've always wanted to do big band, glamour, full glamour, big band, joyful, healing stuff in Vegas.
Well, that can, in the Circus Maximus or in the large showroom, sure, that can be fantastic.
Yeah.
The lounge, you know.
Yeah, the lounge, probably not, but never know, never say no. Never say never, as they say. I mean, I remember when I was playing with the Charlie Watts big band, there was a guy called Jimmy Duca, who we lost 2 years ago now, off into the ether. And he sort of went off this mortal coil. But his arrangements inside what were like, you know, like the old Tom and Jerry kind of jazz stuff that was going on, all the big band, ba-da-ba-da-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba on acid, really, sort of thing. It was just beautiful, beautiful, lush arrangements that were really out there.
Very avant-garde, yeah.
But still really sort of accessible and beautiful and open. And so that's the kind of thing that I just thought hit Vegas with that, and it'd be marvellous.
Yeah.
To celebrate it with everybody looking beautiful and glamorous and glorious. So that's one of my little secret desires. So
now, growing up, I had the opportunity to sit in with some of the famous big bands. I don't know if you remember the Don Ellis band.
Yeah, I do.
They did a lot of odd meter stuff. And, Maynard Ferguson's band. At one point, he had a brain hemorrhage from playing high notes all the time, and he went through surgery and everything and came back and put together a band of Brits. They were all very young players, but just dynamite players.
Yeah.
And did a few recordings with them. Then he sort of went into the pop scene, you know, trying to do the Rocky type stuff and, you know, theme from Rocky, which is okay, I guess, you know. But he really sold his soul, I felt, when he did that. And I guess record companies want you to succeed and compete against a lot of the things that are going on in the rest of the world. And I think it would
we'll do that when we get tired. I mean, I've done it. I've done whole albums according to what I think is commercial or what somebody else thinks is commercial who promises me an easy route through. It's a bit like you've got to go through that process. It depends what stage in your life you're at. But, you know, and then you realize actually the reason that they liked me was because of what I do myself and from my judgment. And actually, if that's not going to work, it's never going to work. It just sounds like the same as everything else that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a whole catalogue of stuff that I would never revisit because it wasn't really about me. It was about you do something that you think is going to make you commercial because you, I think if you're doing interesting stuff, you long to be heard and you can never be heard other than through the vehicle of sometimes thinking, oh, well, if I do commercial stuff first, people will know me and then they'll listen to my less commercial, inverted commas, work.
Yeah, it's sort of like walking a tightrope, isn't it? Because they want you to be commercial. You know, they want to sell records.
Mm.
And so image is very important. And today, in the pop scene, it's all about marketing.
Mm.
Now, there are exceptions to the rule, don't get me wrong, and I don't mean to sound sour. I'm just saying
the industry is changing now as well, because where the majors were always sort of so dominant, now there are many more independent labels who are, you know, it's much more about the independent label putting their stuff out, but it's influenced by that. But I think there's nothing like, say, 20 years ago when that was all there was. It was the only access, you know, and
yes,
to sort of get their own access and create their own vibes and their own strata underneath the business of the majors. So I think there's a lot of exciting things that are not making that not the only option, if you like.
Yeah. Well, as an indie artist, BBS Radio beckons. So
okay. Great stuff. I'm in there.
we'll probably be hearing your music quite a bit on BBS Radio. So,
well, I hope so. That'd be wonderful. That'd be wonderful.
And I'll help you put that together, if you get my meaning, Doug. I'm going to play a song now called Angel, and after I play this, maybe you can tell us a little bit about it.
Okay.
How could I know that you call me angel when there's still crying in my eyes? I didn't think that you'd be so wounded and broken. I thought I'd spoken with those eyes. So let me make it clear. Let the rain fall. Too much too soon is just about as bad as a little too late. So don't go pushing through. Don't go rushing. When I was lost. Just about.
and that's Julie Dennis and Angel. Julie, that is the first song I heard you sing.
Oh, okay.
When you started sending me tracks.
Yeah.
And I was just blown away by your voice. I said, you do have the voice of an angel.
That's in a demo, this one, of something that I did, which I really wanted to be a spiritual number. And so the changes I used underneath it were Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. And it's again, I was talking before about mantric quality of spiritual song, you know what I mean? And I'd already written the lyric, but the those changes are there. If you listen to it again, you'll hear the Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. And I sort of imagined it with a huge sort of spiritual choir.
Oh, yeah. In fact, that was my first comment. Boy, I could hear some horns sneaking in, some strings, this gospel choir. And not that there's anything wrong with it as it is.
Yeah.
It's just that you evoke so much feeling, you know. I find myself wanting to hear that come in and, you know, those ad-libs on the top of it and all that.
Yes, yeah. I mean, I didn't start, and also it was that thing about doing a spiritual number that sounded English. You know what I mean? I was trying to, I get there in the occasional bit like, can't. I'll do that as a little quote for you guys over that side of the pond.
Mm-hmm.
But I was trying to sound, you know, like an awful lot of English people, because we're so affected by America, and especially when you were talking about jazz, you know, it's like we can swing more than cats over in England, but, you know, often people won't accept that because America's where jazz happens and where blues happens. And it was important for me to say, you know, I can sing with my own accent and still sound, you know, groovy and spiritual, do you know what I mean? But bring that individual sort of Englishness to it. And that's what I was trying to do. And also it's about unconditional love, about really loving somebody but not being ready for it to go further than that, and but that you can still love somebody totally. So even though it's a spiritual choir about love, it's not about God per se, really.
Yes, yes, I understand. But we can still be glorious in our relationships, can't we?
Exactly, that's what I mean. It's trying to get that underlying thing about love is unconditional and give it out anyway. It doesn't have to have a type placed onto it. Do you know what I mean? And actually, that's how we learn.
Yes.
Our sort of understanding of the Creator and
yes.
How we're loved unconditionally there.
Well, Julie, I wasn't sure if we'd get any calls tonight, and I wasn't really planning on taking a call, but this is a kind of a special call. If you don't mind taking one. I don't know if we have a comment or a question, but we have Jelani in Atlanta on the line. Jelani, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Hey, Doc.
Do you have a comment or a question for our guest, Julie Dennis?
Yeah, I have two comments and one question.
Okay.
My first question is, I looked you up on, it's your last name is D-E-N-N-I-S?
Yes, it is. Yes, yeah.
Okay, there are a lot of Julie Dennis's.
There are, but mine is julieishername.com.
Oh, okay, yep. I'm on here right now.
Okay.
I'm on here right now. And then another comment. The second song I really, really, really liked. I enjoyed all of them. The second one I really, really liked. And it's kind of funny because when you hear your voice just speaking naturally, you would never think that when you sing, you sound like that, ever.
I know, yeah. That's what we're saying. People never really, they just can't put the face and the voice together, you know.
Right, and then you look at
voice,
the face.
Spoken voice.
Right, it's really interesting, but I like it a lot. And it seems like you have a wide variety of music. The first three songs that I heard are pretty different.
Yes, yeah. I mean, it's just such a huge, I've worked through such a huge range from playing in sort of big soul, 12-piece soul bands to indie, what you'd probably call punk over there. Do you know what I mean? Like bands and jazz all at the same time. So it's, and writing in those genres as well. So it's very difficult to put, you know, to put that breadth in a sort of small show, really. Do you know what I mean? But I hope you've got that eclectic nature of it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
What's your favorite?
What I love about dance music is that you don't have to have a favorite, that, you know, anyone can do a remix that takes a different take on anything you do. And so I just start with a song, and then I often, like on my site, I'll give people my vocal and I'll say, do me a remix, tell me your take on it, and if I like it, we'll put it on the record, you know. And it's always produced this amazing sort of breadth of variety of, you know, sounds and arrangements. So I open out my voice for anyone to play with and give me their take on it, and I will continue to do that, and I do it with every release. So you'll often find things that I even haven't heard. Do you know what I mean? There was one Japanese group that did a fantastic, they're called Penny Ashtray. They did a really sort of fantastic, really electro, you know, clean electro raw mix that I would never have thought of for a song called Sugar, which was really a blues. So anything's possible.
That's pretty cool.
Yes. Well, Jelani, we want to move on here. We're running out of time, but I want to thank you for calling into the show.
And, oh, yeah, well, definitely.
Your comments. Well, be looking for Julie's music because we're going to have it on BBS pretty soon.
Okay, cool.
Okay, thank
you. Oh, and Don, I also wanted to let you know that I'm interested in coming on the show if that's possible.
Yes. Are you going to send me your music or no? I'm just kidding.
I don't think you want to hear me sing.
Well, if your talent is anything like your father's, you'd be excellent. And I know, as I mentioned to you, when you've called in on past shows, I made the prediction that you would be on my show. So yes, we'll work that into the schedule. I might have an open date this month, in fact. I'll get in touch with you on that, okay?
Okay.
All well, right,
nice
thanks for
you,
calling.
Julie.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Lovely speaking to you, too.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll share. I don't want to embarrass him. He's a little bit embarrassed when I, you know, when you talk about family and stuff like
yes.
that.
Yes, yeah.
But I'll share this with you off the air, his special relationship with a very famous actor.
Okay.
And he's Jelani's got great insight into a lot of issues.
Mm.
And he's writing a book about the swine flu.
Oh, right. So. Okay. Okay, great stuff. In relation to the scandals.
Well, I suppose he's going to write about everything, and he's been listening to the show because we've had some, you know, really interesting guests bring out really the groundbreaking research as to what's really going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done some research myself. Mine is sort of forensic type stuff, and we brought it all to this show really, and a number of guests. As I said, it's been something of a yearning for me to get back into a music show. When I first started out, there were some nights I was actually playing live instruments, just, you know, playing some of my material.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've got a couple of spots that I did for the network that people get to hear from time to time.
Mm.
Try to make them funny, you know, and something crazy and interesting to listen to. You heard a few of them, and, you know, they're really off the wall.
Well, but I've been trying to get my radio show together for ages, but I was quite intimidated by the idea of it. I don't know whether you saw that on my site, how the radio show was going to shape up. But we should talk about doing it together instead, then I won't have to be intimidated.
Yes. Well, speaking about doing it together, I'm going to do something a bit different, I wanted to play a song that's, you know, fairly recent creation.
Mm.
I have to, and I said this before, I have to apologize for my voice because it was very raw when I sang the lead on this. But this would give the listeners an idea what music might sound like, you and I working together.
Okay.
And writing. Not definitively, of course. They've heard your singing style, and I'd love you to sing this song if I can play this. This is called Once Upon a Dream.
Okay.
Once upon a dream, I was on
All I can think of is what that would sound like with you singing it.
I'd love to. I'm desperate to have a go. There you go. On a dream. It's not even that bad a key, really.
Well, Can we do a duet on that, do you think?
I think we can, yes. I think, why not?
Well, I would be very honored.
Well, it would be my pleasure.
Now, that's maybe a bit different from what I would do on Angel, was it? Was that?
Yes, yes.
Yes. Because that's so, you know, bluesy and R&B-ish, but I'm very much like you, you know, with my roots in jazz. I love chord modulation. You know, it's symbolic of the movement of spirit and change.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Real change.
Which is sort of what I meant about, you know, that to me what dance music is. It's just another, to me it's symbolic of change and evolution and, you know, viral in the best possible sense.
Yeah,
jazz is just, to me, it just means freedom to go where you want. Whereas I think an awful lot of people sort of sideline jazz and say, oh, if it's jazz, I'm not going to listen to it. Because I remember I used to be told in my early career, don't mention jazz. It's the death knell, you know what I mean, of your career. Don't mention jazz. And then, you know, I'd just do a bit of scatting on a pop tune and people would really like it, you know what I mean? And they didn't think it was scat because I was just wandering around. And I was always told off for mentioning the jazz element, you know.
Well, you know, jazz is the only true American art form. Do you know that? It was born here. It is influenced today by cultures around the world, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm.
You know, there's been an infusion of Latin grooves and African drumming and even singing.
Yeah.
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But there's such a rich history. It's really what America is about. You know, you could tell the history of this country here on our side of.
That's why I've always thought I'm meant to be there. You know, it's that thing about coming to New York. More when I got to New York, I just thought this is where I'm from, and it's so like Liverpool. It's like they are sort of like almost like sister cities, really. There's even some streets where you'd think you were walking down Liverpool, and the mentality is the same. And there's differences, of course, but I'd always imagined, I'd tried to do what I called a tour for tips there, which was trying to do the bars again in the old district, because I'd always imagined you'd come into any bar in New York and sing some jazz and people would be up for it. And that whole thing has absolutely changed. It's not like that anymore. I was totally deluded, but I think it's possible for that to be there again. And I felt absolutely at home there and felt, you know, in America, it is true that everyone has an enthusiasm.
Yes.
That's quite infectious, you know.
Yes. Now, you, a while back, earlier this year, when we had first met, I was going through an issue with my father. My father eventually passed away. So I wasn't really able to pull myself away, you know, to go on a tour with you. But next time we will do that. We'll do some gigs together.
That'd be lovely. The thing was finding a rhythm section, and it was being able to put them there in America. I couldn't possibly bring anybody over with me. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, and it seemed absurd. It was like Coles to Newcastle.
Yeah.
It was a ridiculous idea to take a rhythm section to New York. It seemed madness to me.
Yeah.
It had to be Americans, you know, and just in that context.
Yes. Well, we have some great musicians here. In my area where I live, we've got fantastic musicians.
Mm.
And they're all over the country, really. Mm. The kind of people that could just, you know, you just say, well, we're going to do this, and they just do it, you know.
Yeah.
No rehearsal necessary. So the next time, you know, we'll have a whole band for you, believe me.
Fantastic. Oh, gosh, I'm so excited.
I had the opportunity a few years ago to play with Little Anthony and the Imperials at an event that they call the Rib Fest at the Tower City Amphitheater in Cleveland. This is an outdoor event.
Uh-huh.
There were 100,000 people there, and we opened the show for Blood, Sweat, and Tears, and we did such a great job that they were chanting for us to come back after the second song that the headliner played.
Yeah, yeah.
That sometimes happens, you know.
I really miss that thing about big gigs. I love big gigs because it's an act of meditation.
Oh, yeah.
In those huge gigs, you know, when you've got the light, you can't see anything, but you're sort of like almost in a bubble of sort of vibration, really. And I just...
Yeah. The energy was just incredible, I have to say. And you know, it ends up being almost like a Woodstock event without all the trash and
the chaos,
you know.
Yeah, I do.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show, but I wanted to play one more song and allow the listeners to hear yet another piece. I picked out something which I think maybe you would like to comment on first before I play it. I picked Mythical.
Oh, okay.
Is there a story behind that?
There is. There's somebody how did I find him? A guy called Albert Castillo, who is American, actually. He's over your way. And actually, I think he's in Texas now. He's somebody that's a sort of a house musician and everything. And he'd said we wanted to work together. And I'd already written this song as a duet,
mm-hmm.
and it was about it was just about how I felt at the time, you know, about sort of waiting and hearing about some, you know, the whole idea about the purpose of life and union and what that was all about. But it was a very romantic idea about, you know, it's still okay to think, you know, that your prince will come and that there's, you know, there's somebody out there for you and that you know, there's lots of loving potential in the world, and even if you're waiting seemingly forever and ever, it's still always possible. So it's about possibilities and about people coming together despite thinking that that's sort of all over with. And so it was just the spirit of that, and I thought it had to be a duet about finding each other for different reasons and saving each other rather than my prince will come. You know, I always think that's a lovely line, even though it's a bit of a crap movie, you know, the, what's it called, Pretty Lady or something like that,
Pretty Woman.
Pretty Woman or something, she said, I saved you right back, you know what I mean? So it's got all that romantic sort of language in there, but it's, you know, the old romantic language, but it's all about saving each other right back.
Well, it's every composer's dream, and really every musician's dream, to work with a singer with your talent. And I'm looking forward to what we might create or co-create. And, you know, with you in England and me in the United States, maybe we can be a perfect example of how we can make things work together, you know.
Yeah, that'd be lovely.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we can, yeah, and I think, because your voice really would work to do this as a duet, I think it'd be nice to do this as a duet together. Let's see what everybody thinks.
Okay, I wasn't even suggesting that. I'm just talking about...
But the point is, this is the first incarnation of the song, and it's become many different things since it, because I've developed and developed it somewhat, but this is the first incarnation. This is the actual raw song in its pure form, something at the demo level. So I think you get the sentiment.
Yeah, and you're too kind but putting me in that category. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is Mythical the title?
It's called The Mythical Mix.
Okay, The Mythical Mix, okay.
It's actually called 100,000 Years.
Yeah, it said Albert's Mythical Mix, so I wasn't...
Albert Costello is the guy I'm...
Yeah,
he's a co-producer. He's a wonderful... He's part of Albie Rich, which is a sort of... You know, a combined, as in Al and Richard. Do you know?
Now you didn't say Abbott and Costello.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the thing is, he's a wonderful, wonderful producer and a wonderful writer, and I'm working with him for also Next Plateau in New York with Eddie there, and we're producing some beautiful stuff. He's just had a kid, and he's a wonderful guy, so that's another thing to come in the future.
Yes, I love the feel of this, so and it's a bit different from the other one, so here we are. Mythical Mix.
Okay.
You found me lost without direction, wandering round in a spin. Loving seems so much easier for you.
Very mysterious, I guess.
I haven't heard that in a while. Yeah, it's interesting hearing it back again now, sort of thing, what was going on. You can hear what... I always think when you listen to stuff and you haven't heard it, it reminds you exactly where your head was at when you wrote something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting.
Now, before I let you go here, and I'm going to ask you actually to stay on the call after the end of the show,
okay.
Just so we can... We can push your CDs on the bosses.
Okay, then. The only thing I would say, which is rather practical, is that I have to take my child to school.
I know, I was thinking of that, so I won't keep you long here. You've got another project going, and of course we're going to try to help you maybe get that placed here in the States. We won't spill all the beans on that, but you came up with a really original idea to help people. And something that would be very entertaining and probably very healing for people as well. Sort of a one-stop shop for what?
Well, it's for creative, you know, basically to create song, really. It's basically, I started thinking, you know, I had lots of vocals in my hard drive that I wasn't using because I write for people all the time and I write for myself and things don't come to something. And then... I thought, why can't I put that online? And I started by, as I said earlier, putting my song, the actual raw vocal, the recorded vocal, without any sounds or anything else on it, out on the internet for people to remix. And I thought, why not do that on a grand scale? And then I thought, well, you know, we could do that with every vocal. We could do it with everything from Madonna's Like a Virgin to Elvis's Sun Sessions. Why not? The idea that everybody could get access to a vocal and play with it and make their own sounds out of it was really fascinating to me. So I started building a site to try and do that. And we finished building that site. But it also became, well, people need educating about how to use the songwriting software on their computers to make those songs sound great. And if you haven't got instruments, if you can't, if you're not as wonderfully talented as Don, who can play every instrument since mankind began, sort of like you could actually maybe sort of tap into some of Don's sort of playing and use that on your song as well as, say, my vocal or Peggy Lee's vocal. And the idea that people could compile their own creative stuff in a general way, as well as it being a professional tool, so that professional musicians and semi-professionals can come and work with people they've always wanted to work with who are maybe now dead. But actually, the recordings are still very much alive. And so it allows everybody to create something new from what's gone before. And it also allows a lesser-known artist to make a nice, decent income from, because it's a, it will be about $3 probably for download of a whole song, but it's a fiver, what we say, a fiver in England, £5. to download a whole song and to play with it. But every time that's downloaded, that goes to the artist who's given us the song. And also, whatever new product comes out of it, again, all of the normal royalties and everything are paid. So there's a nice steady income from downloads for people. And it's also, it creates prosperity, creates new music, and creates a nice community where we can all learn and share with each other.
Well, it sounds like the metamorphosis of karaoke.
yes. Only it's all purely sort of created in the truest sense of the word. You know,
yes.
It's just the way that people sort of pretend to be something that they're not, and they convince themselves, and that's a lovely experience. But this is about people really creating something new from what's gone before and breathing new life. And also sometimes just creating a sort of relationship with one another where they can then go off and do new music. Like if somebody might download my material and like it, but then we might write something together and create new stuff entirely, new vocals entirely. So it's more than that.
Yes. Well, we'll have more. I'm going to put you on the spot. Can we invite you back to Evident Footprints for another interview in the near future?
Heavens above. I'd love to. I was waiting for my invite. Of course you can. It'd be lovely. Yeah, okay. It's a long one, that one. It's too long to sort of talk about here, isn't it?
Yes.
Bore everybody to death.
Yes. Now, I want to direct people to your website. It's julieishername.com. Pretty easy to remember.
Yeah.
And they can listen to some of the tracks that I played here. You've got your hits there. And they can acquire them. I like that word. They can invest in them, can't they?
Yes, that would be lovely. Because the thing is that the last three releases have been totally torrented. One of the things about Simply Vocals, which is the idea I was talking about before, is the idea of getting hackers to constantly work 24 hours as a task force to sort of try and dismantle torrent sites so that people come and perhaps buy the music they enjoy playing.
Yes.
And get the music back to people. So I haven't made a penny from my last three releases because they've been totally torrented. So it would be rather marvelous if anybody bought some tracks. That would be new and marvelous.
Well, yes, it would. And we're going to roll out here with a little bit of your music as a nice background bed. While I say goodnight to the listening audience and to you, Julie Dennis, it's been an absolute pleasure. I'm sure you've blessed and probably healed many people just from them hearing your beautiful voice, your wonderful music.
And I'd love to think so. It's been an absolute pleasure for me, too.
And your positive ideas, your creative ideas. And I look forward to working with you as well as having you on Evident Footprints again.
Oh, I'd love that too.
And I know you have to scoot, so I'm going to say goodnight.
Okay, goodnight to you too.
And you take care. And if you run into any of the guys from Cheeky Charlie, tell them I said
hello. In a very friendlied way.
Yes. Okay, you have a wonderful day. It's already morning there where you are.
Oh, yes, I've been sitting in my nightie. I better go and get my clothes on.
Well, next time we're going to do a full webcast, video and all. So.
Oh, heavens above, no, I couldn't do that.
Don't change. No, I'm kidding. Okay, folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and tonight's special musical guest, Miss Julie Dennis. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio and blogtalkradio.com. For running the show either live or on an archive broadcast. Also, special thanks to Don and Doug, the music director, Newsom, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Also like to thank Jelani for his kind messages and his question, or I should say kind comments. And you, the listening audience, thank you for tuning in. Join us again tomorrow evening when my special guest will be Mr. Drew Malone Rains III. Also, I'll be substituting, guest hosting, I should say, for Dr. A. Truat on Republic Broadcasting Network on his show, The Story Behind the Story, both on RBN and then later in the evening on the Rents Radio Network. Thank you for tuning in. I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.